Welcome, everybody. May we have the roll call, please?
Cathedral City.
Here.
Palm Desert.
Here.
Palm Springs.
Here.
Thank you. So we're going to do the public comments on agenda items next, and I do have... Is that the way you prefer? You don't want to hold those to when we're actually addressing them?
It is up to you. We have made a change. Other CVAG meetings. It's up to the chair on how you do it. I could argue either way of doing it.
Yeah.
In this case, it might be best because we do have interviews scheduled.
Right. So
to do it the way, yeah.
Okay. You guys okay with that?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. First card I have is from Brad Anderson. And it's on item 6A, which is Care for Your Enhanced Enrollment Program.
Hi. Thank you.
Here you are. Hi.
Would it be okay if I waited until presentations were given?
I don't know.
It's up to you, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. That's
thank you.
We'll do that. And I'll offer... Well, Brad, you're on item 8 as well.
That's at the very end, I guess.
And do you want to comment on that now, or...?
I think I need to wait for that.
Okay. You got it. Absolutely. Please remind me if I forget.
I will.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Board member, director comments.
Okay.
Cathedral City, Palm Springs. Okay. My only brief comment to make it official is I understand that normal elections for chairmanship are October or November.
Yes.
So we will look forward to seeing those on the agenda at the appropriate time.
We'll do that.
When I say look forward, I mean
you mean it.
I mean it.
Yeah.
Okay. Consent calendar is the minutes from the board meetings of June 17th and July 31st. Is there a motion for approval of the consent
calendar? Mr. Chair, if I can just interrupt. I was not here for the 31st, so I should abstain.
Well, you don't have to abstain, but it's customary for some to do that.
Yes, it is.
For me.
All right. And the abstentions vote with the majority. Somebody should vote in favor. So
I can vote in favor. I mean, it's my understanding that you can approve minutes even if you didn't attend the meeting.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
I would move for approval of both June and July. Whatever it is.
Yeah. And a second?
Second.
Yes.
And there'll be one vote in favor and two abstentions. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right.
Or at least not one.
Which one?
I was on the first one.
So
I think
I was there for the 17th. I was
not there for the 17th.
We're all there for the 17th. So that. Well, let me take that.
Yeah.
Is there a motion to approve June 17th minutes?
Second.
There's a motion. A second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And I'd move to approve July 31st, and we have a second. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Abstain.
Any opposed? Two abstentions.
Thank you.
Does that work?
That works.
This is possibly the most confusing start to a meeting I've ever
chaired.
You guys were helpless without me. I saw that. Everybody wants to believe it. All right. Now we're to the meat of the meeting. First item is the 6A, Care for Your Enhanced Enrollment Program. I assume we will get the staff report, we will ask questions, we will take public testimony, and then we'll have discussion.
And Ben will outline the proposed process for you.
Okay. Ben?
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. At the June 17th board meeting, the board directed staff to release a request for proposals to find a qualified organization to implement the Karen Farah Enhanced Enrollment Program. Staff released a request for proposals and distributed it to 6 marketing firms, 12 nonprofit organizations. 5 proposals were received, with budgets ranging from $150,000 to $456,000 for a 2-year program, with the possibility of additional incentives based on performance. A subcommittee of 6 people reviewed the proposals, scoring and ranking them with some feedback. The top 2 scored proposals have been invited to join DCE for the DCE Board for interviews. They are Richard Heath and Associates, Inc. and Lift to Rise. The board will listen to a 15-minute presentation from each of the candidates, followed by a 15-minute session of questions and answers at the conclusion of the interviews. The board will make a determination on the best qualified organization to implement the program and then authorize the executive director to enter into contract negotiations with the selected proposer. The final budget will be considered during the contract negotiations, as well as some level of performance-based compensation above the budget amount. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Richard Heath and Associates. RHA is headquartered in Fresno with offices in the City of Industry, San Diego, and Chico, and has been in business for 39 years.
And I'm sorry, are you just introducing them, or are you intending to move forward to the interviews?
Oh, I'm going to introduce them, and then they're going to do the interview. They're going to have the first interview, and then I'm going to, we're going to bring Lifterize in, and they're going to do their interview, and you're going to have questions, 15 minutes of questions with each proposer after the interview.
Right after each interview. So the public comments, I'm thinking, should be before the interviews. Is that okay with you?
It's definitely up to you. I'd prefer to wait until
after.
Before you give your decision.
Okay.
That's okay?
Sure.
Thank you.
Sorry, Ben.
No worries.
Go ahead.
RHA manages large-scale outreach campaigns to reach diverse populations throughout California. They develop and administer small and large-scale programs, reaching over 2 million low-income households, and provide measurable results for utilities and other clients. I would like to now introduce Martha Lucy and Elizabeth Catanisi with RHA to give us their proposal.
Ben, can I interject just on process? And we did ask both of the organizations to honor their competitors. And so Lift to Rise is downstairs in their office during this presentation. And Richard Heath has agreed after their presentation that they'll skip out of the room during that presentation. And after Lift to Rise is done and you're done with them, we'll allow all to come in here and listen to deliberation and your decision. Fair enough?
Sure.
That sounds fair. And I got the Martha Lucy. I didn't get the second.
Yes, the second.
Elizabeth
Catanisi.
Very good. Nice to meet you.
Elizabeth in the back.
Thank you.
We got you surrounded.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much. To reiterate, Richard Heath and Associates was founded 40 years ago to help low-income households access the benefit of energy efficiency. So I was really pleased to see on your website and in the mission statement that we hold this in common, trying to boost people's access to energy efficiency. We ran some of the first pilot tests in California to try to design programs that would help low-income households access the benefits of energy efficiency. And almost 40 years later, that's what we continue to do. Our roots grow deep in serving low-income communities as well as delivering energy efficiency solutions. As Benjamin mentioned, we are a minority business enterprise, and we've got 200 employees statewide with our headquarters in Fresno and four other offices, including one here in Los Angeles. We have employees not only at all of our offices, but also in remote sites. Elizabeth works remotely so that she can be embedded in the communities in which she serves. So here's a map of our coverage of the state of California, and as you'll see, we work in every community throughout the state of California. We have built very strong relationships with both the investor-owned utilities and municipal utilities because of our ability to deliver results. We've been helping households achieve energy efficiency and reach into some of the hardest-to-serve parts of the community to make sure that we can deliver these programs. And we do it on an annual basis, reaching over 100,000 households. So we work not only with large investor-owned utilities, we work with municipal utilities. We develop standards and pilot programs for the state of California. And we've had enduring relationships with all of these folks because of our ability to deliver results one household at a time. On the outreach side, so not only do we run energy efficiency programs, we also run programs that reach deep into low-income communities. We're currently the administrator for the California Low-Cost Auto Insurance, and that's what Elizabeth oversees, our outreach efforts there, to make sure households who could benefit from lower-cost insurance understand that program and get enrolled in insurance. We've also recently been selected for two different contracts under the census to go out and reach the hardest-to-reach communities to make sure that everybody is counted in the census. It's a challenging issue to make sure that all households fill out their census, but it's really important to local communities to make sure everybody gets counted. And we're experts at making sure that there's deep reach into the community and messages get out there. We also worked with Cover California at the start of the program to train up a series of outreach and enrollment counselors and have worked on the California Lifeline. We work with all of these folks because of our deep reach into the community and the ability to deliver services to folks who others have a hard time reaching. I'm going to turn things over to Elizabeth to talk about our approach for this program.
All right. Well, thank you so much, all of you. Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting us. Arrow clicker? Yeah, arrow forward. Perfect.
Arrow forward.
As Martha mentioned, I'm a senior program manager with RHA, and I'm overseeing an outreach and marketing program for the California Department of Insurance and their low-cost auto insurance program, which coincidentally is very similar to your work that you're looking for. And so we were delighted to respond to your RFP. When we first look at RFPs, we want to make sure we have a really clear understanding of the project first. I was going to say click the slide, but I'm the clicker. we really want to make sure that we have a clear understanding of the project and so that we can then land on an approach that best complements your work while giving the utmost consideration to cost. We really do think that it's prudent to be good stewards of your dollars. So with that, our project understanding is, first and foremost, your goal to increase community awareness around CARE and FARA. By increasing and educating the community on how they can save on energy, we actually target our second goal there, which is to increase enrollments around CARE and FARA programs in Cathedral City, Palm Desert, and Palm Springs. We also understand that there's about 6,000 people that are eligible, and we aim to find them. Right? Our understanding of the project's objectives is to deploy a low-income, multilingual outreach campaign, again, in those three DCE, surely you all know that acronym, communities or cities, and also to develop a grassroots outreach and partnerships with CBOs. And you know what? This is our sweet spot. So you're lucky that we're here today. That really is our sweet spot to do this type of work. I keep wanting to tell you to turn the slide, Martha. Sorry. So how will we do that? So based on reading the RFP, the scope of the work, we really feel that a community-based campaign would meet your needs. And in doing so, this diagram illustrates really the way that, the campaign strategy. It's engage, recruit, support, enroll, and probably again and again. And so in the engagement phase, the team will be, number one, re-engaging some relationships that we've had in some of our past work that you saw here in these communities, building new relationships, and identifying those champions, those key people that are going to help send messages about this program and spread the word. Next, we're recruiting. And so this is when we're really securing partnerships and kind of solidifying those commitments from folks. Like, here's what we're going to do. What are you going to do? Once we complete that, we're looking at supporting the partners. We would be remiss, right, to say, come work for us, come help us, and here's a pack of brochures, and have fun with that, right? So we want to make sure that we're supporting these organizations that are committing to assist in this effort. And so we may be training staffs, we may be restocking their collateral, we may be distributing an e-newsletter where we keep this program on the top of minds of folks, giving them promising practice, best strategies, things that are working, things that aren't working, status of enrollments in the community, so on and so forth. And then finally, after we've engaged, we've recruited, we're supporting, then people are enrolling. We're building up your sales force. We're out here because I think there's a lot of folks in this community already that want to help their community and serve citizens. And so again, once we get through the process, our partners are enrolling, capitation contractors are enrolling, even RHA, our team is enrolling. And at that point, we get to reevaluate. How are we doing? Are the enrollments coming in like we like? Let's go back and engage some more. Let's go back and recruit. Let's be supportive, so on and so forth. So that's really the campaign strategy. Also during our RFP review, we want to make sure that we understand the target populations, right? So we actually are excellent at tweaking strategies, if you will, to reach specific targets. So we had identified five here as an example of some specific targets that we may do things a little bit differently. We're looking for areas where there's large populations of folks who meet the federal poverty level, our low-income folks. We're looking for homeowners. We're looking for senior citizens. We're looking for large concentrations of Latinos. And the reasons, again, that we do that is so that we can focus in on our strategies and analyze those segments, and we can deploy strategies. So I'll give you an example. Seniors. Seniors would definitely be a target for this program. We know seniors are on a fixed income. We know that seniors may meet eligibility requirements. They may need support completing applications. They may have trouble seeing and writing in the little small boxes. They may not have a computer, or they may not use a cell phone to get online. They may not trust putting personal information into a computer. And all of these will surely be barriers for folks to sign up for your program. So just a couple strategies that we might use in this particular instance. And I brought this example because it's a really good one. And this is actually pictured in there as well, but I wanted to show it to you. And this is a senior piece. And you might see, senior piece, that's really tiny. Well, you know what seniors like to do with your stuff? They like to take it home with them. They like to put it in their wallet, in their pocket, in their purse. And then they like to be able to read it. So it's big print. Just a sample piece and an example of how we can tweak things a little bit to target certain populations. With our senior population as well, we would definitely, because of some of those reasons where they may be leery to sign up, we would utilize those CBOs and organizations that already are serving our senior populations. The best example that I can give is AAA, the Area Agency on Aging. It's a statewide organization that provides congregate meal programs across the state of California. It's a fantastic resource to get in and partner, because they already have this established trusted relationship with their senior base. We can come in their lunch hour and get friendly and give them a presentation, talk to them about the program. It's a win-win for everyone. All right. So the methodology is really, well, how we, this is the how part, right? The how part is led by an outreach specialist, an RHA outreach specialist. And our outreach specialist is, I have a lot of tongue-tied words there, apparently, leads all of our engagement efforts with partners. Without the specialist, there'd be no network, there'd be no partnership. What the outreach specialist will be doing is recruiting network partners, and I'm going to talk in more detail about that here in just a moment. They'll be supporting partners. They will be doing direct-to-consumer outreach, and they will also oversee and monitor your capitation contractors. There we go. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about those activities. Recruiting partners. The biggest takeaway I would like for you to have in this section here is that our team is really adept at researching an organization for their suitability and credibility. We think that's a really key piece of our work. Not only do we research organizations to find out about their suitability, we network at events, we attend collaboratives. This particular photograph actually on the slide is a great example of Monica Leva, who is one of our specialists, who not only met with hundreds of consumers that day at that particular event, but she met with all the partners, or all of the other folks who were presenting, and secured 8 follow-up phone calls and connections to see how she could connect those folks to the program. So they're really adept at making those connections. Excuse me. Okay. So they will also support partners. And a big, the key takeaway for this is identifying those teachable moments. So partners who agree to help you, we can't load extra work on them. We've got to complement their work, find a way that they can talk about your program to their constituents in a way that doesn't bog them down and say, we're not doing that. We want to be able to work within the work that they're already doing. Yeah, here I'm getting flagged for time, so I'll move along. Our outreach specialists will also monitor our application submittals. We don't know exactly what that looks like yet without the capitation contractors, but we are absolutely on board to coordinate whatever we need to do with the partners. Direct-to-consumer outreach, and I think I mentioned this before, the team will be doing events and presentations. One thing that they're getting really adept at is pro bono ethnic radio and TV interviews, and so we get a lot of really great coverage on some of our programs. And again, these are pro bono. They may engage in canvassing, pop-up stands in the markets, so on and so forth. So we talked a little bit about let's talk about what our network partners. They're pro bono partners. They really do extend our reach. They are a godsend. They are already interfacing with the top populations that we want to reach, that interface with low-income and hard-to-reach communities. They're mission-aligned, and they're trusted. That's really the key, is that they're trusted, and those are the kind of folks that we're looking for to deploy education around care and fair in their communities and to their constituents. These are the kind of activities that a network partner may participate in. Again, it's going to be similar to what a specialist does, but it's whatever they do, right? Remember I said we want to work it into the work they're doing. It could be events, presentations. They could share care information during intake and case management. They could refer consumers to capitation contractors for enrollment, as example. And finally, our capitation contractor activity is going to be probably similar. They're going to be out there doing events and presentations. The big difference is they're enrolling consumers in CARE and FARA, and they're submitting those and collecting those applications. And lastly, this is another takeaway I'd really like you to take away today, and that RHA is about outcomes. And Martha talked about this earlier. We are committed to doing activities that deliver outcomes to DCE. We're not going to spin our wheels. We're not going to go places that don't yield results. The graphic here just displays the progress that we can make with our plan proposal. In the beginning, the first year is a little bit heavier than the second year. We're just thinking we're getting ramped up, getting lots of partners, and those are the kind of deliverables. And again, it would be worked out in a contract level, but that give you an idea of what we can deliver. And lastly, because I'm pretty sure I went over time, if you choose RHA, we're committed to being an excellent thought partner. We've been that with every client we've ever had. Things change. Sometimes we think we have the greatest plan in the world, and we go out and we do it, and we do it well, and it's not working. It's not getting the results that we want. So we pivot, and we're good at pivoting. We're good at pivoting for the sake of outcomes for the program or the sake of your organization. So thank you.
Thank you. I think you're right on time.
Oh.
So now we have up to 15 minutes of questions. I know I have a few, but I'm going to defer to my colleagues if you want to start it off.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you, by the way, for your. It's kind of weird that you guys are in two different directions.
Sorry.
Stereo.
I'm probably going to embarrass myself, but I have no idea what a capitation contractor is. So, can you explain that to me?
Yeah, a capitation contractor is the one who enrolls somebody in the. Yeah, not decapitation, no. Enrolls them in the rate payer assistance program.
Enrolls them. Like just a partner that you would hook up with.
Yeah, it's a formal name that's used within the industry for enrollment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And then another question. The team that you have listed in your proposal, which I think is led by Elizabeth.
Yes, sir.
Correct?
Yes, sir.
And then you list, I think, three other specific folks that would be working on the penetration efforts.
Yes.
Are those still, is that the same team? Has any of that changed?
Yes, probably one will change. We're working on one other staff that's a little bit closer to this area and just haven't gotten a firm commitment.
Okay. And then I reserve the right to ask other questions too. But my final question, at least for this phase, is so I know you have Southern California offices. You don't have an office in the Coachella Valley.
Yes, sir.
So, but I actually have taken the time to talk to a couple of your references, and they've indicated that you've done outstanding work for them and that that wasn't an issue. But can you just explain to me in more detail sort of the logistics of how, if you were to give in the contract, how that would actually work in terms of physicality and proximity to the valley and coming out and how frequently, et cetera, et cetera?
Sure. So there's different levels of staff. So I think for myself personally, who will be managing, I'm working more from my home office, doing reporting, tracking data that my team is feeding me. My outreach team supervisor is here in Southern California and would work most likely remotely with her outreach specialist sometimes. And I don't know if I can, if I have a dosage of what that might look like, how often they would be here. And the reason that I'm reluctant to say and share is because my team is usually ready to run and go. So we don't have a lot of training and new things that we need to go over in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I think that the people just start running. So we normally meet with our people weekly or biweekly at a minimum via mm-hmm. phone. We meet in person, I would say maybe quarterly. And then your specialist will be located here to do the work. It actually, the way that the budget's set up, just to be really clear, is 4 months of full time, and then the remainder of the contract would be three quarter time. We just, again, we were trying to be really prudent with your dollars and felt like in the front end we would need some full-time support to really get up and running. And once we established some of those relationships, we mm-hmm. probably didn't need to invest that much time.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
So just in, you know, looking at sort of the numbers, you obviously did this to the goals set out in the RFC.
Yes, sir.
And just wanted to get your sense, as it starts, let's say it was incrementally a little higher in budget. Does, as you're doing the work, looking at the second year being so much more people being enrolled in your goal than the first, if we increase the budget, let's say 20%, would that get us a 20% jump in numbers, or would it get us more? As, from your experience.
I think that's a tough call. I mean, I think that the more people we have, the more work we get done. Absolutely. We can build more, get more partnerships. We can get more people on the ground doing enrollments. I don't know that I would guarantee you a 20% increase with a 20% budget. I think it depends on where the dollars went, to be honest. So as an example, a random example, maybe that 20% increase was to media. You know, and you want to invest some media dollars, which we didn't include in the proposal. We do have other proposals that include it. Something like that, yeah, that might yield you some more results. It might. You know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I've got a few questions as well. I'm having a hard time kind of getting my arms around what staffing would look like.
Okay.
To what extent are there going to be boots in the ground here in the Coachella Valley? And I say that because, you know, like each of our cities has a senior center. We can't just call up the senior center and say, this is who we are, we want to have an ad in your newsletter.
Of course not. Of course not. We would have one person in the area here, and that person's spending full time, those full time hours in the beginning, at that senior center in every community, building that relationship. And that's why I said we kind of loaded up in the front end, because it's about building relationships. And you have to be present, and you have to be, you know, with people, getting to know them, establishing, you know, really what those relationships are going to look like.
So those first 4 months, that person will be here full-time, physically located in the Coachella Valley?
Yes.
Okay. And then three-quarters time after that?
Yes.
And so forth. Okay. All right. Did I understand that your goal in the two-year period is to enroll 1,600?
The goals that you have in the art, yes, I believe.
Based
it.
On 6,000?
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The 25%.
Mm-hmm. How does that comport with your experience in other communities? I mean, is that a realistic expectation? Might we do worse? Can we do better?
I think the hard part is going to be, it looks to me like there is an account number that has to go on the application. Is that required?
For tracking? Yeah, so that we can track to see how where the credit is for that enrollment.
No, for the consumer. So if I'm applying and I'm filling out the application, the very first thing it asks is my account number. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the account number.
Is that required in the application?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. You know, out of the community events. So, but you know what? You know, I've already thought through the work around that, and what needs to happen is that folks are going to understand, how do I get my account number? That's where we come to play. When we design job aids or
you're talking about an Edison account number? Or what do you mean?
Yeah, they need to include, yes, sir. Yeah.
And they don't know how to get it?
They don't even put them on the bills anymore, do they?
They do.
Do they? Okay, that's good. That's good. Some people do electronic, you know what I mean? Not everybody keeps their bills. Some people throw their bills away.
So let me come back, because I know we're short on time, to my question.
Oh, yeah.
Is the goal of 1600 a reasonable Can we reasonably expect to achieve that goal?
I think so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in your application, it looks like you've had pretty extensive experience in doing this exact type of work.
Yes, sir.
The individuals that would be assigned to this account, have they had experience in doing this type of work?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And finally, you know, the reliance on partners, I think I know what that means. I mean, you're identifying organizations here in the Coachella Valley besides the ones that you already have relationships with.
Yes.
Organizations that serve the low-income community.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're trying to kind of get onto their database and communicate via their communication system. Does that?
That's pretty good, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think there's different ways that the information gets spread once it hits a partner, but you're on point. You know, we're basically looking to just extend our tentacles with other organizations, and we do that with CLCA very well.
So, you know,
if I may add to that, I believe as well you would learn from those organizations what their key events are, and you would show up at those key events.
Okay.
That
was actually my follow-up question. So we all have a lot of events that, you know, might attract the target audience, so to speak. So you would include a physical presence there?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. We would love to hear about it. And I'm sure that we will. We're going to be asking you.
Yeah.
If you don't tell us, we'll be asking you.
Okay. Those are my questions. Any kind of additional or follow-up questions?
Just one final question.
Yes.
So we're assuming that all of your staff are going to be bilingual.
They are.
Okay. I have another question.
Well, not me. I don't think. Sorry. So I guess that was not correct. Our team and
your customer-facing.
Our customer-facing team.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Jeff, you good?
Good.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Well, we sure
thank you so much for taking the time to put together the application. It's expensive and to be here with us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure.
I appreciate it.
Beautiful community.
Very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Yes, it is a beautiful community.
It is.
Especially to me.
That's better.
Schooler here in Palm Springs. Is that why you're
here?
I know it's a different
thing. Because they listed the senior center.
It's supposed to break 100 again tomorrow.
So I called.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be down there for a while. There's no
the morning temps are noticeably
cool. But he apparently does
his research. Morning.
Evening.
Tuesday.
I'm like, I walking the dogs. Was the director
before. I feel like you got five during the now.
Right. Yes.
Go in like the sunshine and eat in the sun, but when it comes to going out during the day, it's like,
why would you do this from the
nobody else asked the question.
He goes outside all summer long, basks in the sun.
Mine does not. The Foster ones.
These were interesting. Put that all together. So you're getting geared up for
your very academic one.
Hi, thank you for joining us. I'll give a brief introduction with Lyft Horizon. I know you have had them here before and know who they are, but Lyft Horizon is located here in Palm Desert, and they launched as an independent nonprofit organization in 2018. They have relationships with many local institutions and government agencies, which assist them in advancing their vision of all Coachella Valley families healthy, stable, and thriving. Lyft Rise has good knowledge of the Coachella Valley and have overcome some of the challenges that programs such as this could be faced with.
They have shown success at implementing low-income residential utility programs here in the desert, but I'll let them tell you more about that. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Heather Vicona, the CEO and President of Lift to Rise, and Jocelyn Vargas, the Director of Resource and Development and Communications.
Thank you, Ben.
You're ready to go.
Thank you, everyone. It's nice to be here with all of you and play a little bit of musical chairs. Mm-hmm. We're grateful for this opportunity to talk to you about something that actually really aligns centrally with the work of Lift to Rise. So I'll start with just a brief introduction about Lift to Rise. Like Ben said, hopefully the clicker works. Oh, Ben, it's not with me.
She froze up on me.
There we go. Like Ben said, we call this our North Star. Really, is it, we believe in a future where all Coachella Valley families are healthy, stable, and thriving. We are a collective impact organization. So really, our core mission is to bring together community leaders and residents to solve the underlying causes of poverty and inequality. And so we do this, our collective impact approach really organizes our work in two ways. We simultaneously work to really tackle root cause issues that are impacting our systems, while simultaneously working to scale and increase the saturation of immediately stabilizing supports. The work that we're here to talk to you about really squares falls squarely within that second frame of thinking about how to scale and increase the saturation of immediately stabilizing supports. All of our work occurs in things that we call CANs. A CAN is a collaborative action network, and it consists of cross-sector practitioners and partners that work together to organize around a result. And in the case of the work that we're here to talk to you about today, Lift to Rise really has two CANs, which we'll talk to you a little bit more about, but one CAN that focuses on economic opportunity. Some folks in this room might actually be in that picture. That was our housing CAN, our Housing Collaborative Action Network, that was action planning last week. And our housing work, we focus on a goal of wanting all families to have safe and affordable housing with more money left over to spend on things other than rent. And where this work came from was from community listening, of listening to more than 1,400 residents in the last few years. And the number one thing that residents told us is that their housing stability was their biggest source of precarity, so their biggest source of constant ongoing instability. And one of the first things that we heard from residents is that utilities, specifically utility subsidies, could be a really helpful thing in helping them gain stability. So we actually have experience of implementing a utility subsidy intervention before. Like I said earlier, Lift, one of the things that I really want to emphasize in this is that both the proposal that we gave you and what we're here to talk to you about today, Lift to Rise is really a backbone organization. So we have a staff, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but we have a staff now of 10, but really we exist to support partners and other organizations to embed capacities for the interventions that will support families to exist over time. So the program that we worked on before, REAP, we worked on this with IID and Leadership Council for Justice and Solutions, and this was an intervention that we worked on in the Eastern Coachella Valley. We were specifically targeting mobile home parks. And if you look at the bottom, we offered a few things that we learned in that. We learned that bilingual language skills were essential. We learned that making sure that the outreach wasn't sufficient, that mailers and door knocking wasn't sufficient, but that if we really wanted to get folks enrolled, we needed to make sure that we had community meetings and workshops in a time of day that works for working families. We know that most folks in the Coachella Valley, in fact, 2 out of 3 folks, almost 60% of our population, is housing burdened. So we don't have to think about that for very long. There's a lot of people who can actually use this type of stabilizing support. Are those people sitting at home all day? No, they're out working. And so when we think about what's going to work to get low-income residents, which we talk about this in our office and we kind of laugh, if we look around us at the jobs that exist in our economy, most folks are low-income working folks that can really use this kind of benefit. So when we think about what's going to work to make sure that folks can take advantage of these kind of subsidies, we really think, and what we learned before, is that we have to really think about the time of day and what works in specific communities for things to work. One thing we also learned with working with IID is that it was really essential to streamline the enrollment process. So we started with a lot of door knocking and community meetings, but what we learned is if we left a gap of time in between getting information and signing up, the probability of success was a lot lower. So what we think is this is almost like a caseworker model when we think about outreach. And when we think about that, and Jocelyn's going to talk about this a little bit, we think that the reason why what we're proposing to you really makes sense is because what we're interested in is absolutely we're interested in the 7,000 people that qualify for this that are targeted, but we're really interested in embedding the capacity for this subsidy to exist over time in the existing organizations and nodes of trust within a community. So who's a node of trust? It's the workers at the Boys and Girls Club. It's the folks at the YMCA. It's folks in the school district. These are the folks that every single day are supporting family stability. And folks might know that to join the Boys and Girls Club in Cathedral City, it's $25 a month. And in other interventions, when we've worked with folks like the Boys and Girls Club in Cathedral City, what we've been able to do, and John knows a little bit about this work, is really to incentivize participation by getting families' fees waived for a month. And there's something that we see as real potential creative intervention to both support existing partner organizations, which all day long, the YMCAs, the Boys and Girls Clubs, the school districts, these folks exist to figure out how to make families more stable. That's why they're there taking care of families' children. And so we see a way that this could actually become a benefit to them as they think about increasing folks' stability. So our enrollment goals, we doubled the enrollment goals that were offered in the RFP. We really think that that's realistic for at least 50% saturation. Lift Rise uses a result framework in all of our goals. So we, in all of our work, we set out what is the goal that we're going for, and then how do we work back from there. So our goal is at least 50% saturation, but I just have to say we really want 100% saturation, and we want to hold ourselves accountable to that. We believe that that's feasible because we think that we know from listening to residents and working with really hundreds of partner organizations locally that this type of subsidy is really needed in the community. And I'll pause and take a breath and maybe talk a little bit about how we see this as building sustainable community capacity.
Yeah, so as Heather mentioned, we're really looking at this proposal as more than just a programmatic approach. We're really looking to build the capacity and really leverage our strongest asset, which is our partners. So we're really looking to identify strategies from the beginning to end that are going to be sustainable and are going to continue the enrollment of residents in these programs aside from just a two-year proposal. I think part of the proposal also entailed looking or developing a sustainability plan. So we're really looking at testing strategies that are going to be sustainable and successful throughout the process.
Sure,
yeah. So as Heather mentioned, we really have a strong growing staff capacity to do this work. We have staff members that have expertise in various areas, including grassroots organizing, education, health, planning, and data. So we really have a very well-rounded staffing capacity to be able to identify key effective strategies to work in the community. I think one thing that we'd also like to emphasize is that staff members have strong relationships in our community. So we have a number of folks that are homegrown Coachella Valley residents. So we have a very strong understanding of the complexity of our community and the needs of our community and be able to build strong relationships to become those trusted messengers. I think more and more we see that residents really do value having trusted residents that they see continuously in their community, in their churches, their schools, in order to really trust and enroll in these programs. So as I mentioned, there's really three areas that I think are really strong assets to our proposal. We have staff that is bilingual, highly skilled, and I think our strongest piece of work is really building on leveraging our collaborative framework to be able to execute the proposal that we have outlined.
Did you want to see my website?
Yeah. I think aside from, so I think one of the things that we mentioned in terms of marketing and communications, we're really looking to change the way in which residents see these support services. So I think oftentimes residents are afraid or even kind of hesitant to receive these supports or these resources because of the connotation that there is along with enrolling, right? So there's typically a negative connotation when you're accessing these services, right? So we have a very, how would I explain it? You know, no one really wants to be perceived as having the need to access these services. So I think in terms of our marketing approach, we really want to try to change that narrative of what it means to have access to these support services.
Thanks, Jocelyn. And I'm going to go down into the weeds a little bit for a minute about exactly how we hold and implement work. In all of our CANs, when we are working on interventions like this that work directly with residents, and I'm really sorry for folks who don't know us, I know Tom knows that we use a lot of acronyms and jargon, so we would like to offer some jargon and savvy's nodding. So we hold our work in what we call PDSAs, or Plan, Do, Study, Act. What we do is with partners, we create six-week test cycles. And we make a hypothesis. So I can give you as an example what we did previously when we were working in the mobile home park. We would say our hypothesis is that if we hold 4 workshops and do outreach on 5 days, that we're going to get 100 families enrolled in the next month. And then we step back and say, okay, to make that happen, how much do we have to do? How well do we have to do it to get to that better off? And why do we do that? Because we're not just interested in enrolling the number of families that we identified every month, but we're also interested in the middle of that, it says learning questions. We hold ourselves accountable to these questions. So we say, well, how does this work for Spanish-speaking only families? How might this work for a family that has mixed status? We really ask all of these questions because what we want is to learn from this so that in the next cycle, how did this time of day work? How does this work for single mothers, right? We're really trying to learn, and this isn't just to learn for the sake of learning, but to improve the next cycle. In a test intervention that we ran a couple of summers ago, what we realized is that we were holding meetings at 5:30 and we were not getting enough folks. And we immediately, looking back at our data and our recruitment, were able to say, you know what, this meeting actually needs to occur at 7:30. So we never set out and say, this is what we're gonna do for the next 10 years or next 2 years. We step back and say, what are we gonna do for the next 6 weeks? Simultaneously holding ourselves accountable. And also that gives away, because we are a partnership, we really care about partners coming to the table and for everyone to be able to bring their numbers. It's an accountability mechanism, and it's also a mechanism for people to be able to share their contribution. So here's a lovely timeline. So one thing that's really exciting to us about the timing of this is, so folks who know who participate in our housing CAN, Lift to Rise is launching a new action plan in January, and that will be a 2-year action plan. So we work on these longer 10-year goals. So we have a 10-year goal of reducing rent burden and increasing the supply of affordable housing by 10,000 units. And reducing rent burden by 30%. That's our 10-year goal. But what we do every 2 years is we say, how far can we get in the next 2 years? And then we action plan as opposed to strategic planning, which is more about like what might the strategies be. And those performance measures I talked to you about, how much are we going to do, how well are we going to do it, and what's the better off? Those are the things we develop in the action planning. So we just finished the first phase of our action planning for the housing CAN this week. And Jocelyn and I probably both slept all weekend to be able to be here with you today, because that was 3 days of last week. Our economic opportunity CAN, where this work would live, it's action planning in November. So why that's significant to this committee is that means we already have the infrastructure in place to make this work a success. We already have more than 30 partners, and all of those partners know and have participated in the community listening that's led to this being a strategic priority for us. We certainly would appreciate your resources to support this work, but this is work that we would do in either case. We have other pieces of work that are similar to this because we really passionately feel that this type of subsidy is really critical to families. So now the fun part, the budget. So the reason why we budgeted in the way that we did, and we realized we were the highest budget that came to you all, the majority of this budget is really for us to have a flexibility with partners so that we can support their work. What we're trying to do is to get the numbers that we identified in the proposal to you, but really what we'd like to do is to create the permanent capacity within the community and with community nodes and community organizations for folks to understand that this exists and for folks to access it. So we have another piece of work that's similar to this right now with the Mission Asset Fund in San Francisco. We've started piloting where their only partner in the Inland Empire to pilot lending circles, which I'd love to tell you all about later. But what we realized in working with them is that we had to have a direct staffing position. So that work, it's not publicly announced until October, so please don't broadcast it. But that work we are working on with the City of Coachella, the College of the Desert, and Pueblo Unido. We hold a similar model here where we want to work with partners, but we know that we, as the folks who would have the contract with you, that we have to have full-time staff to make sure that we're overseeing that partnership. So I think that Ben is telling me I'm done. So I'm finished. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have up to 15 minutes of questions.
Sure.
I'll defer to my colleagues to start it off.
I have no questions.
I'm just like swimming in my head.
Okay.
So let's talk about sort of the goal, right?
Yeah.
Doubling the goal and looking at how you see it going over time. Can you sort of discuss that a little more? Because obviously
sure.
You came in with a pretty strong goal, which is great. We
yeah.
Need some more people enrolled. But sort
yeah.
of how confident you are that you can get there and...
Yeah, so this is just, I guess, like this is sort of baked into the DNA of Lift Your Eyes. I always say, if we say we're going to be about utility work or do some utility work, we'll do utility work. If we say we're going to enroll 7,000 families come hell or high water, we will enroll 7,000 families because you engineer back from there. And I think we've budgeted in a way and we have the staffing capacity to hold ourselves to over 2 years' time. What could it take to really increase the saturation by 50%. It's been our experience that if we hold that framework, we're able to meet it. I don't know if that says enough about, yeah.
I think one thing that I would like to add is that at our tables, we have systems leaders, so we're really looking at how do we scale our strategy. So I feel like that's also one of the strengths that we have in terms of our framework.
Yeah, so we have our networks and then leveraging our networks, and we've piloted a few other interventions with 112 families in Cathedral City where we have existing relationships and we've worked with other folks in that way. So based on previous work, we think that's realistic and based on our staffing capacity as it is currently.
Just one other question. I mean, you talked a lot about families and Boys and Girls Clubs and schools,
yeah.
which are all critical.
I think I know what's coming.
Yes. Yeah. Obviously, a big proportion, you know, are seniors
yeah.
Who aren't going to be accessing those services, but maybe others are homebound.
Yeah.
So just thoughts on reaching.
Yeah. So I think that's sort of an internal conversation we had today as well, that we need to tap into partnership with folks like the Jocelyn Center and other folks that are really hubs for seniors and thinking about, I think that's a newer area of work for us. I think that's also why the data analysis and collection is really important about thinking about, because we kind of operate in a frame of like, how do we multiply and how do we multiply leverage? And so, yeah, absolutely. I don't want, because I realize that's what I'm saying the whole time
yeah.
as well, that we're thinking about the whole population and not just families with children.
I have a few questions, but first a follow-up to Jeff's question. Because these are questions on my mind, I want to be fair to you and give you an opportunity to address them. So Lift to Rise, my perception is, has had a focus on low-income communities, specifically the Latino community and so forth, East Valley and so forth. And the senior community is significantly low-income. Does that present a challenge for Lift to Rise? Is that still part of your overall mission?
So I think to be fair, we have a focus on We certainly have a focus on low-income residents. We don't specifically have a focus only on Latino residents. What we know from data and research is that Latino residents are the most across the valley disproportionately impacted. People of color are the folks that are most disproportionately impacted when we look at incomes and economic disparities. But absolutely, our work stretches beyond. And I think, Sebi, maybe some of the more recent work that you're familiar with is East Valley work, but you know, a funny thing is that East Valley folks would not tell you that we're an East Valley org. We certainly work across the entire catchment.
Yeah, and the question is not a criticism of the good work that you've done. It's more of, are senior citizens who are also part of the low-income community still a part of your overall mission?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I'm looking at some of the individuals that are named to staff this project, and some of them appear to not have experience in this specifically. I think Christy is going to manage the project. I think that's what it said in your application.
Mm-hmm. So I think
I'm a big fan of Christy's. I don't mean that to be misinterpreted. My overall question is, the people that are staffed, A, do they have experience specifically in this type of work, and B, to what extent are they bilingual?
So I think one of the reasons why Christy was identified as kind of like a supervisor, as Heather mentioned in the presentation, this work is going to be living under the economic opportunity CAN. So as a director of collective impact, Christy oversees the CANs. But we do have Hector, who was recently hired and will be overseeing specifically the economic opportunity CAN. Agustina and myself have a lot of extensive experience working with residents. So we've been, as part of our work already, kind of getting to know the West Valley and some of the needs there.
Let me help you focus your answer on my question.
Okay.
So I know you've had some experience with two mobile home parks doing this type of work. Will those people be leveraged, or will their experience be utilized in some way on this project?
Yeah, and Mariela Magana, who worked with us during that time, she actually is now in LA, but she still works with Lift Rise in a capacity that supports residents. To Jocelyn's point, we are having an internal, as a new organization, an internal conversation about how staff are aligned directly. Agustin, who would be working on this, he has a ton of experience in community organizing. That's Jocelyn's background. And we're being nimble with ourselves about sort of the structure. I can see where your question's coming from, but Christy oversees staff that are community organizing staff. And she's in a counterpart role to Jocelyn, and the two of them work together on the management of those staff.
Okay. Can we go to the goal slide for just a second, where you had the estimated eligible, and then there it is. So I think we're told there's about 6,000 eligible, so that the two together come out to about 6,500, so that's still within our range of understanding. And I just want to make sure I understand. So your goal, if we total up the two-year total, is over 3,300, or around 3,300 enrollment. And I think our target in the contract was 1,600, and that's where we want to do 100% better than that. Mm. So I know you've got great spirit, but tell me more substantively why you think that kind of goal, which is obviously attractive, appealing, and ambitious, why is that realistic?
Is this meeting being recorded?
Yes.
It's it is. Okay. So we have the experience.
That's an interesting preface to an answer.
Well, so
as elected officials usually.
Yeah, I mean, without getting myself in trouble on public record, because this does involve a sensitive topic that has legal implications for us. That's the best that I can do without getting myself in trouble. So we have the experience of targeting something very similar that impacted 50 residents locally. And in the last year, Lift to Rise was able to, going back to talking points in my head, Lift to Rise was able to create a result that created a result for 15,000 residents across the state of California. So we're actually not able to talk about that work specifically publicly, but that's where our confidence comes from.
Okay. And just so, there's something substantive. It's not just wishful thinking or we're really good, we're going to get this.
Yeah. Okay. And that's also where our organizational growth comes from. And that's probably about as much as I can say without getting...
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on.
No, it's okay. It's a great question. Like, why do we think that we can get half of these people enrolled?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
And if we can go to the budgets line for a second. There's a big line item that I completely do not understand. It says total community support investment.
Yeah.
It's $150,000 out of a total of $238,000 in year one.
Sure.
It's $130,000 out of $218,000 in year two. What exactly is that?
Sure. So I think it's a great asset, and it's one of the things that makes Lyft Rise this work beautiful and also messy and hard to understand, really, is that we are a collaboration and a partnership. And so we don't go to our partners and say, this is exactly how you're going to do it. We say we're holding this framework and we're going to hold ourselves accountable to a result. What is the way that we take advantage of the folks, the partners, and the organizations in the room? This also becomes a trick for when we budget for Lyft to Rise. How do we make sure that we've allocated enough resources so that, let's just pretend it's the Boys and Girls Club of Cathedral City, the YMCA, and let's say another Y or Boys and Girls Club that picks up the partner work, that we've made sure that we've budgeted in a way that allows us to be flexible to meet their needs as they're able to become leaders in the work with us. So that's why we've totaled it in that way.
Talk to me like I'm an accountant.
Okay. I don't like those conversations.
What are you going to write the check to and for what purpose? What is that line item? How are you going to spend that money?
Yeah, so that would mean picking up a portion of FTE, of partner staff.
So you're going to compensate them for time spent, potentially, for time spent doing this work.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that it becomes and then the goal is, like, and we try to
see,
do...
we can understand each other.
Yeah. Well, then the goal is, like, literally in the housing work right now, like, we, for those of you who are in cities, excited to have a meeting with you next month to talk about how we can embed some of the work that the Housing Can is doing literally into folks' jobs description. And that's where this becomes sustainable, is we embed this into people's job descriptions, and over time, this work lives, and we've given them enough oomph to be able to do the trade-off of the trainings and the capacity building that needs to occur. Sorry, Savvy, I didn't understand what you were asking.
No, it's okay. I think those are my questions for now. Any follow-up or other questions?
No, sir.
Okay. Then we thank you, taking the time to sit there and submit the application. And thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
I didn't tell the other but I...
You can go ahead and stay. We're bringing in the other firm, and then we have a deliberation. Yeah, deliberate.
So we're going to deliberate an open session. It's not a closed session item.
Outside.
It's an open session.
Okay.
So you can say wonderful things.
Will you negotiate a contract? I mean, is this...
And then you'll direct me to negotiate a contract.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I just make a choice? Just 1 minute?
No. And comfort break.
And, you know, and both firms have been willing to consider any approach. If you'd like to deliberate without the firms, you could ask them to step out and you could have that conversation. It is a public meeting, so other members of the public can stay here. And it is recorded, so the firms will hear all the wonderful things or nasty things you say about them later. And I say firms broadly, the organizations.
It's interesting. Do you have a preference?
No,
not really. Transparency is good.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's public, so it's whether they want to stay or not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One presumes that they'd want to stay, but that's up to them, of course.
I might need to step out early, but just
All right, we're going to just take a minute, give John an opportunity to come back. If anybody needs to do anything, this would be a good time.
Perhaps awkward, as appropriate as this is, it's a transparent meeting and a transparent process. Oftentimes, staff comes back and gives a board, you know, the final recommendation. In this case, we had two outstanding proposals and two very good organizations. Thought it was appropriate for the board to consider both. This is a public meeting. The board has a chance to deliberate and provide direction to staff. Go with one of the firms, go with neither of the firms, reconsider, whatever you choose. The intent is not to negotiate a contract at this point, but to give your staff direction. That direction could be to negotiate with one of these organizations. We suggested some deal points. My favorite, performance-based contracts. You know, we're looking at trying to get as many folks signed up as possible. Maybe there's some incentives or disincentives woven into the agreement. It's not something that we discussed in detail with either of the organizations, but it could be a part of our negotiations if you direct me to do so. There is at least one member of the public. I think we had some other reviewers are in the are we here too, or
yeah,
just
both reviewers.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Just so you know, who's in the audience, but we have at least one member of the public that wants to speak. Might be a good opportunity to do that now before you deliberate.
That's a good idea.
With your consent, yeah, we'll do the public comments before we deliberate. Brad Anderson.
Yes, thank you, Brad Anderson. I know at the June 17th meeting, my stance really hasn't changed. I believe that... if you receive a bill from Edison to say you should be well aware of these discount programs, and I think it's kind of premature to go out and seek this information now and this participation into these programs until you're fairly well down the road. And that's just what I think. I think they had very good outstanding years, but again, the labor immigration, possibly, that's a stance I didn't even think of. And I believe people are maybe not embarrassed, but are private with that information, just like you suggested, and it would be hard to get those people on board. And I suggest maybe going where people are, food insecurity and all that, and maybe go to those events. But that's like ANZA, for example, that was on the news. I had no idea. I had no idea that people would be suffering out there like they are. So my eyes are open, but I believe Edison, the gas company, could probably do a lot better job of finding these people and encouraging them to take advantage of their programs, because there is the programs. So I have a letter, too, I'd like to submit to the record.
That's okay. Sure.
I have one for everybody if you want it.
Do you have extra copies already?
Sure.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. I don't have other cards, but is there anyone else present that wishes to address the board regarding this agenda item? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move forward with our own discussion and deliberations so we can come to a decision. Anybody want to start that off? I will say, preface our discussion by saying, we're blessed with an abundance of qualified applicants, in this case, too. I know our deliberation will be difficult, so whoever selected the other applicant should not deem as any kind of a slight, because clearly we have two excellent options to choose from, and we thank both of you. Discussion?
Okay, well, I'll kick this off. Jeff, are you sure?
Yeah, please. I'm thinking.
Well,
processing thoughts.
So here's my thinking. First of all, both firms should feel really good that they made, out of the five or six pool that you both made it to this point, and there are strengths in both proposals, and I'm intimately familiar with the work of Heather's organization and the work that they've done. And I've come to learn about RHA and the work that they've done, and I've spoken with some of their references. And putting aside cost for a moment, because I trust that staff will be able to negotiate the best contract with the appropriate incentives that's possible to get to these goals, and would be looking forward to getting that back. From my perspective, on this effort, we really can't afford a miss. This is one of our first huge initial program outreach efforts, and there's a lot riding on this. And that was kind of my overriding consideration in looking at experience and performance and ability to deliver. And I have to say that I came out on the side of RHA. As being the firm I think can deliver. But I did want to say, and I don't want to complicate this any more than it already is, in terms of partnerships, if there was a way to consider, if they'd be willing to be open to this, utilizing Lift to Rise based on their work in the community as a primary contractor, I think that would be something that would behoove them to do. So those are my initial thoughts.
I was equally very impressed with both. I think my leaning is probably, unfortunately, slightly different, but I think both would do a great job. And I do think RHA has clearly more experience. They've been around a long time. I think where I'm slight, and these are slight, right? Like, sure. They both would be great. Leaning to Lift to Rise is the local connections, you know, being on the board of local organizations who would be involved in this work either way. I think the model of engaging them and the budget to engage them, so this becomes embedded in their work, because none of those organizations have free staff time. I just think creates having them part of that process from the beginning and embedded the way they would be, and the knowledge of those people. You know, we don't need someone on the ground for 4 months, which I get, to make those relationships. They exist. You just pick up the phone. And I think that is really important in this. I think having the financial part of the budget to make sure those staff people, this is part of their job, and it will stay part of their job after. So 2 years from now, it'll become embedded in the senior center of the Boys and Girls Club, that when they're signing people up, they're making sure they're getting these benefits. And I think bringing them into the process from the start with someone they know is going to make this more impactful. And I think we'll get the results that are better. And I really appreciate the interviews, because they really helped my framing of this. But that's what I think the strength for me is for Lift to Rise, although both really qualified.
Well, I would echo that there's no clear, you know, prominent winner, so to speak, in my mind, or standout, because they're both so qualified. I actually, in reading the applications, I thought, well, it's got to be RHA. I mean, they've got the experience. They've been there, done that. Lift to Rise is a new, somewhat untested organization, with the exception of you know, two mobile home parks and so forth. And then listening to the presentations kind of broadened my perspective. I think RHA, in terms of the pluses, their experience is absolutely a plus. They've absolutely been there, done that, and I think can leverage that experience to the Coachella Valley. Another plus was the cost. I think it's about $100,000 less that's projected. But listening to Lift to Rise, I mean, the local knowledge, as you mentioned, that's really kind of invaluable. It's the entire Coachella Valley in total is still a small community, and people know each other, and they can pick up the phone and say, this is Heather, or this is whoever, and this is what I got going. Can I spend a few minutes with you, or whatever? And that goes a long ways in our small little community. We're welcoming to newcomers, but I think that relationship doesn't need to be built if it's already there. Another plus for Lift to Rise was the goal. Ambitious, but I'm kind of sensing that it's realistic, at least in their minds. And I think in many ways they can't afford to fail, so I think they'll do everything possible to ensure that they attain that goal, having put it in black and white and on the record. I thought once I understood that reimbursement scheme, which is a large reason that the budget is higher, I thought that was pretty creative. Instead of just going to these charitable organizations that are always fighting for that next dollar to say, you know, we'd like you to do A, B, and C, and by the way, we understand that costs you time, money, whatever, and we're going to compensate you. We want to partner up and support that effort. I thought that was pretty creative. And if it results in the projected enrollments, then it's money well spent. That's the differential in the budget. So as I'm listening to myself speak and kind of go through the pluses and minuses, I kind of started off kind of thinking RHA had the edge. And now as I have this broadened perspective after the interviews and the questions of my colleagues, I'm hedging towards Lift to Rise. I guess the question to you, John, would be, if we end up with Lift to Rise, is that still comfortable and acceptable to you, or do you have strong feelings?
Well, I have strong feelings about failure and about what that means to DCE going forward. So I guess I would... I would still have to register that I would prefer RHA.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. I get that.
Maybe it's a question for you, Tom, is... Because I thought about this, and I probably went through a similar process, right, coming and thinking slight one and then sort of moving as we went through the presentations and the discussion. But regardless of who we go with, in negotiating the contract, and you sort of mentioned this, because, of course, not only we want and need this to be successful, I think, sort of to John's point, is to have sort of timeline performance measurables, right? And, you know, and you discussed it a little bit and mentioned it, but I'm thinking, you know, if you're committing to doing this, you know, that's, you're being paid to do a certain thing that you're committing to. Like, how, I'd want to see that negotiated to the contract, right? Because when you look price per enrollment, right, with Verizon, there's a lot more bang for the buck. And so, but we need to make sure that's happening, right? We don't want to, you know, 2 years from now say, oops, nor did they, right? Nor did anyone. But in negotiating a contract, have that be sort of key there and what those terms are, which I think we want to see and talk about. Because I agree with you. I think, you know, I think everyone here wants this to be successful. And I think for DC, it's really important it's successful. And we think about the number of people we can help and the amount of money it saves them. It's just extraordinary impact on people's lives. So I think having really clear, result-driven contract is going to be important.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's such an excellent point, John, and I agree with you, Jeff. The need for success is paramount. Selfishly, in my case, you know, I've got colleagues that I need to convince about DCE, and there was a, kind of a false start, and that created questions and skepticism, none of which was our fault, and I thought that we as a board reacted very appropriately and constructively, but nevertheless, it, you know, created some perception and skepticism. This cannot add to that.
Right.
You know, this project has to be a success and demonstrate the worth and the value of DCE. So part of the consideration is, you know, which applicant is more likely to get us there. And that's a tough one. I mean, I probably am leaning towards Lift to Rise, but I think which if the two of you said, oh, RHA is it, I would have been okay with that because I think they're both highly qualified. I think having measurable standards as we go along, as you mentioned, Jeff, that's going to be critical. I wouldn't want to get to the end of 2 years and say, well, we thought we were going to get 3,000. We're about 200, but we feel good. It's 200 good people. The final comment I would make is, sadly, we do have to spend $300,000-$400,000, whatever it is, to enroll people. Sadly, Edison and utilities, for whatever reason, don't promote these programs, certainly don't have the kind of access to the target audience that we need to reach. The reality is it ain't going to happen if we don't do something. And so we're back to what's our greatest likelihood of success.
Yeah. And I appreciate that because, right, we sort of had a couple goals in starting this in the first place, right? There's saving people money and greener energy. And so this is something really concrete we can do right now to save people most in need money. And to me that is, you know, if we did nothing else, that would be a great accomplishment of this. And I feel great about it.
Yeah, and it might be persuasive to other cities to see the value of DCE and creating those options for their residents as Palm Springs is taking the lead on. All right. So I guess if there's going to be a motion, it would be for a selection and then to direct staff to negotiate a contract subject to our approval.
Right. So I'll make a motion to direct staff to negotiate a contract with Lift to Rise. And I don't know what the process would be for us to work with you on that, but...
The things that you've described are deal points that were woven into the staff report, and I've got this direction as well. I gather there'll be a second here. And if there is, and this is the way you go, we'd negotiate with Lift to Rise and come back to you at the next meeting with a proposed contract and the terms that would include likely off-ramps for the board to consider. And as hard as this conversation is, particularly in front of two very qualified organizations, it's about the best sort of conversation to have for your staff, because both firms are on notice that you demand results, and there's somebody to step in behind Lyft or Rise if they don't perhaps agree with the terms that you will ultimately consider.
Exactly. I will second the motion, and discussion, I would add to the comment made earlier by Jeff, which is, and that you brought up, Tom, I love, you know, I believe in meritocracies, so I think having a performance-based contract that holds the vendor's feet to the fire, so to speak, and maintains accountability and concrete results is very key to that contract. Other discussion?
The only other item I would mention is that I'm going to actually support the motion. I think it's important that that we show that we're all in. But I think I've made my point about what's important, and we'll look forward to the detail of the agreement and what you're going to bring back to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If there's no further discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? Motion is passed unanimously. Thank you again to each.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. And you know, we never know what the future holds, so we look forward to working with both of you again.
We appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, there's more.
Not much more.
We're on the clock here.
Okay, just put this stuff away again.
Really interesting, though.
Yeah.
Right? Reading both of them. I read both twice and actually came in, but slight in both, but just listening and the ideas are just always.
Yeah. Devil will be in the details, as they say.
We're great. Well, that's Tom's problem.
Yeah, thanks.
It's good.
No pressure, Tom.
Think about being on council instead of staff.
I do want to thank my colleagues on the support. It's a pleasure working with them. I think you're a classy group. Appreciate that very much.
Yeah, you're a mark.
Don't know what that. Okay, well, with that, we will move to item 6B, which is amendment number 2 to the Joint Powers Agreement. Mr. Burke.
Yeah, this has been on your agenda several times, and just I was going to cover for Ryan to some extent at the last meeting, because the Palm Desert representatives couldn't be here. I begged Ryan to show up, because under your JPA, you can have senior staff represent your city on the JPA. However, I begged him an hour or 5 minutes before the meeting to come over, and so he was not officially designated to be the representative, and out of an abundance of caution, we put this back on the agenda. The intent is to include language in the JPA that would give some certainty to the one member in particular that's moving forward with buying and selling electricity in the city of Palm Springs, that revenues and expenses related to those transactions and that effort accrue and are accounted for in essentially a separate account. And so we've kind of gone over this language a number of times. It's here for your consideration and unanimous approval, hopefully.
Yes. Question on the language, and probably just for the record, but just to make clear that in the way it's worded, that if one or more members proceeds, it gets split, and then if all do, then it gets split equally. But proceeding doesn't mean putting your municipal load on. In other words, so if the other two cities just did it for their municipal load, that doesn't mean they're actually... I know that's our intent, but someone could read it. A clever lawyer might read it. Try it.
It's not my intent.
Right. It's when you put all your ratepayers into the program, right? That's the word that was sort of missing, right? Because you are a ratepayer.
It takes an attorney to go through this. That is certainly the intent, yes. And the record will reflect that. If you'd like to make modifications, I prefer you not make modifications, frankly, because
our city attorney
potentially there's a noticing requirement if there's another modification, and then we put this on again.
All of our minutes and records show what our intent was, but just to make it clear before we voted that everyone...
And notably, just from a staff perspective, if the municipal loads were added, we'd separately account for those anyway.
Okay.
We would take the same approach.
Yes. Well, we have the separate accounts. But
yes.
That's all.
Thank you.
I'm happy to move this.
So there's a motion for approval.
Second.
There's a second. Just quick discussion. Number one, for the record, to set your ease a little bit, I completely agree with your interpretation and support that. And number two, apologies. I was completely out of town and thought that my alternate, Kathleen Kelly, was going to attend, and very late it turned out she wasn't going to be able to, so I apologize for the delay and the additional staff time. Any other comments? Okay. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None. Motion is passed unanimously. And we have a DC program launch and activities update from no other than Katie Barrows.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'll be very brief. Just to follow up from our conversation at the last meeting, we did conclude discussions with Southern California Edison that led to an agreement which makes it possible for the City of Palm Springs to launch and start serving customers in September of 2020. Again, that delay is based on the billing update that the Edison company is involved with. And that agreement actually did get filed with the Public Utilities Commission. We don't know exactly what the time frame is for them to make a decision, but we feel confident that they will approve that agreement and move us forward. And so now at this stage, we're just starting to work with staff and putting together our outreach efforts, and we anticipate having an outreach plan. We want to bring that to the Community Advisory Committee and then bring it to the board. We'll be working on that over the next couple of months. We need about 6 months to do the real hands-on work that involves launching for the city. And as the staff report indicates, about 60 days, if you count backwards from September 1st, puts the notification of residents in the July-August period. So we want to make sure we get a lot of word out in advance of that so that we're not missing folks and send out a postcard or something of that sort. So just wanted you to be aware we're working on that next step. With regard to the Community Advisory Committee, they did have a meeting in July. We had at least a quorum of the members and a lot of enthusiasm that was mentioned at the last meeting. A lot of folks, I think, in fact, today we have three of those members, David Friedman, Lonnie from the City of Palm Springs, and Kim, who you, of course, know from Palm Desert. So thanks to you all guys for coming. We gave them an opportunity to get oriented to DC, had a lot of good discussion and questions about the program and so what some of the opportunities are down the line. At this point, the Care Fera program is going to be a focus for them. And as you know, they participated in the review of the proposals. So I think Benjamin is planning to have a meeting. We're looking at October 17th is the next date for the meeting. We want to give folks a chance to come back to town. For those who don't report back in September, like you guys, if, at least you do, board members. So anyway, that meeting is in the works, and we would anticipate having a contract concluded for the Care Fera consultant so we can have the members meet with those folks. And I know we've already had a lot of suggestions and comments from them about ways that they can help with the outreach, and they obviously are connected to the community organizations that we want to partner with. So that's kind of the next step for them. We'll also be talking to them about some of the general outreach efforts. So that's just a quick update. If you have any questions, please let us know. And we're looking forward to moving forward with some great programs.
Thank you. Questions for staff?
Thank you.
Sorry, two quick questions. One, the cities that have not launched, when would they have an opportunity to reconsider?
Well, the next opportunity for Palm Desert and Cathedral City would be 2021.
Yeah.
And that could be January forward in 2021. But
so we might reignite the conversation sometime in late 20, for example, or mid-20.
Right. Well, we've had some conversations with your staff. Ryan approached us about having a study session for Palm Desert. Exactly. We'd certainly be available to do the same for Cathedral City or provide some, you know, background, especially in Cathedral City where you have new council members. We're anxious to work with you and get outreach and obviously get the community more familiar as well, whatever time.
I would just, Mr. Jarvis, just mention that I think we're planning a briefing to the council on the municipal load question on the 25th.
Okay.
If I can get the information I need.
Yeah, I can get that.
Thank you.
And second question, you mentioned, and I realized I was neglectful. I think four members from the committee participated on the interview panel.
Yes, well, on the review panel.
The review panel, mm-hmm. Yeah, the review of the applications. Mm-hmm. So if you would please convey, I'll try to make the October 17th meeting, mm-hmm. just to personally thank them for being on the committee and so mm-hmm. forth. But mm-hmm. if you can, if I'm not, please convey our board's appreciation for the time they put in. And Ben, I feel to thank you as well for kind of shepherding that whole process. Great job.
Good job.
Thank
you.
And you've got three of them here, actually.
That were on the committee?
Well,
thank you.
Lost one.
And the fourth one doesn't matter. Forget about it.
Okay. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you so much. It's always the hard work instead of being
through those.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, and that brings us to item 7, which I think is just informational. We have the attendance record. We have the unaudited balance sheet and financial statement. Thank you for that. And then the letter outlining the scope and timing, that's from the CPA for the audit itself. Any questions to staff about any of that? Okay. And finally, on 8, we have public comments on non-agenda items, and I think Brad Anderson, you submitted a card for that as well.
Great. Thank you again. I just wanted to bring attention I'm going to talk about agendas. The public comment areas that I don't know if you noticed, but the whole fundamental agenda has been changed during the public comments. I noticed if I wanted to speak on any certain subject now, it would have to be addressed at the beginning of the meeting, like Palm Springs does. And the Palm Springs is the only city I know that does this, except for now that we've got nothing to but CBay now. And I think it was a purely a staff decision to do that. I was here in June at this meeting, and then it happened in July. And I guess it has something to do with the many people that came to the homeless committee. But I thought that was a very isolated matter to change the whole fundamental principles of how the meetings are run. And I would like to see it change back to how it was, because if you only allotted 3 minutes to talk about all of the topics on the agenda, that's really taking away some of your rights, or perceived rights, I guess, to talk about each one in that time period of 3 minutes. And then the non-agenda items were reduced in time to 2 minutes. And I thought these meetings, I'd like Palm Springs, where you run 6 hours long, basically all the time. Yeah, but these are just, you know, an hour long. I don't know, but I would like to see possibly the board consider that. I know each committee would consider their own meetings, but it appears that didn't take place and this was changed. So. And I have a letter addressing that, too. I'd like to submit to everybody.
Sure.
And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, I did notice on our cards, the submittal cards, we don't put an address. We should probably add, particularly this JPA, where the programs might be slightly different from one city to the next. And like Mr. Anderson's from Rancho Mirage, it'd be nice to know where speakers are from for your own purposes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's always optional. But yeah. They don't hurt.
Thank you, Eric.
It'd be good to know. Let's see. And that brings... is there anyone else present who wishes to address the board on any item before us or not before us? Seeing none. Announcements. Next meeting, October 21st. That's a Monday, as usual, at 2:30 p.m. I don't see any conflict for me. I should be there. Any other comments from the board?
Yes, sir.
Staff?
Good meeting.
Very good meeting. Productive. This meeting is adjourned.